Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Beginning, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it's always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. Well, there's a lot going on, needless to say, and as you all know, there's going to be a lot going on as time goes on. Certainly, this system that we're in is not going to decrease in what it does, particularly as it pertains to having an impact and effect on us as a people. And so we can kind of look forward to some things that are going to be happening. Some are expected and some are not so expected. But either way, there's some things coming down the pike, family, that I think is going to really have a impact on our people in such a way that some will not survive. Anyway, moving right along. Last night was a wonderful, wonderful event. It was hosted by Brother Razakhan and Brother Bigger Dre here in Philadelphia at the Rotunda. Again, quite amazing, meaning, you know, the people who came, and we had folks that came in from New York, from other locations outside of Philadelphia. It was really, really heartfelt. The support, the love for Dr. Mutula Shakur was just off the hook. And once again, though, Philadelphia, for whatever reason, the black folks here just kind of, I don't know. I could tell you they were MIA, a lot of them, who talked a lot of stuff about, you know, liberation, justice, our people, da-da-da-da. They were nowhere to be found. So, you know, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say maybe they were on Facebook or one of the other streaming apparatuses that, you know, was going on last night. Maybe that was it. At any rate, we are very, very blessed to have been a part of that. I did a very brief presentation, but again, it was about Dr. Mutula Shakur. So we were just sharing our love, our appreciation for him. And again, you know, the panel discussion, incredible. We had folks that, again, came in from New York and also from Newark, New Jersey. Baba Lai came, Sister Dequi from New York, Brother Sekul Dinga, and Dr. McIntosh was in the house. I mean, it was really, really a nice event. And hopefully we will be able to provide you with some clips very, very soon because it was recorded. Anyway, for those who do not know, of course, the great attorney at war, our attorney at war, Brother Austin Maddox, going home services was this past Monday. And, you know, I was unable to be there physically, but I was definitely there spiritually and, of course, got the opportunity to look at it as it was also being live streamed. And again, as I mentioned on Sister Keisha's program on Thursday, Thorough Black Talk, I usually don't get, you know, like too emotional or whatever, you know, at funerals, going home services and whatever. When I do go, I go to pay my respects and, you know, also to, you know, interact with people who are there who I know really care about the person, et cetera. But I often tend to avoid certain types of going home services because a lot of times it'd be a lot of fake and phony stuff. People end up coming who really don't even like the person or haven't spoke to the person or, you know, whatever. So I tend to kind of like, you know, get away from those kinds of settings. But it was certainly my intention to be at our brother's going home services. And again, you could feel, you know, through, at least from me watching the live stream, you could feel the love and the appreciation for him. Some of the testimonials were just, you know, very, very heartfelt. And again, you know, big shout out to all that attended. And you know, for all who played a role in our ancestors, well, now ancestors' mission in educating and, of course, bringing justice and liberation to our people. I mean, that was very, very, you know, important and certainly a very powerful thing that our brother did. And, of course, his mate, Sister Leona Maddox as well. Anyway, moving right along, family. So as we proceed tonight, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to, of course, continue our salute to Brother Alton Maddox, but also we're going to talk a little more about Dr. Matula Shakur, give you a little update on that, and also sharing some views about last night. Brother Omowale Africa is going to be joining us. He, too, attended the activity, and he's going to share his thoughts about it. But he's going to also share some other stuff. As any of you who might be familiar with him, of course, you know he's pretty outspoken, that puts it mildly, but he's also working on quite a few projects as well. So he's going to share some of that with us. And we're going to also talk with, you know, I know that a lot of our people are still into voting, and that's okay. Yeah, I guess. But what if we begin to introduce to them some other, if not possibilities, some other thoughts, some more insight? Well, here at Philly, starting on Saturday, we're going to start what we call Poli-Sci 101, Black Poli-Sci 101, and civics classes. Yep, we'll be doing that. We said we would, and so we are. So on Saturday, we'll be over at the Nile Garden. Again, we're going to be doing monthly sessions there on different things, always focusing on what we're really looking at in terms of the development of our community. That definitely has to be strengthened, rebuilt, really. Our families need to be strengthened, but our community needs to be rebuilt because it has just gone totally insane, needless to say. At any rate, we'll be doing that on Saturday. And again, we have these sessions now called Black Poli-Sci 101, where we will begin to get into the nitty-gritty of politics or politrics, what it is, what it isn't, what people think it is, what, you know, we know it is, and so forth and so on. We're going to break it down in such a way that people really start getting the truth about what's really going on. Do folks really understand, overstand, how that stuff really works or doesn't? Meaning, do you realize that in a lot of situations, if you don't have a direct connection either to a party and or a campaign that is supporting or endorsing a candidate, do you realize that you are only going to get the services that is mandated by law based on what it is they're supposed to be doing? So essentially, if it's a city council person, they have to give you the services relevant to city council. Or if it's a state rep, assembly, they have to give you the services. So all that other stuff about what you think they should do and all of that ain't got nothing to do with nothing in the bigger scheme of things. It has absolutely nothing to do with the reality of how this stuff operates. So a lot of times people get disenfranchised. They get a little upset because they think that the person that they voted for is not doing A, B, N, or C. Well, of course not, because if you don't have skin in the game, and I ain't talking about just, you know, pushing the lever to vote for them, you're pushing that lever to get the services, to get the representative that you want to service you in terms of making certain that they provide you with information, that you have access to the committee meetings, and you know what legislation and da 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 da. That's really what it's about, not this other stuff. And so folks need to be real clear. Unless you contribute to their campaign in some kind of way, shape, fashion, or form, or you are directly linked to one of those parties and some of the other stuff that goes with that, you're not going to get a whole lot. And a whole lot in the context of stuff that's going to really benefit our people, you, our people, etc. That's not how it works. So again, we're going to be doing Poli-Sci 101 and civics classes to help folks to really know a lot more about what this stuff really is. What is the Register of Wills? What is the real role of the sheriff? What who's voting for these judges that get in office? What do you really know about them other than the commercial that they run during election time, et cetera, et cetera? So these are some of the things we'll be talking about on Saturday, along with some other things. And by the way, it will be live streamed, so you will be able to check it out. You can join in. Oh, and by the way, it's an invitation for those here in Philly. It's an invitation for various candidates to kind of, you know, share what their positions are specifically on the issue of reparations and Mumia Abu-Jamal. But we're going to also begin to recruit. So brothers and sisters who are interested in running for office, they are welcome to come by also and share a little bit about, you know, what they are planning to do, wanting to do, et cetera, in possibly running for a political office. Uh-huh. So that's some of the things that you're going to hear more about as we proceed with the warm weather coming. Anyway, I think we're almost ready to bring in our first extended family guest for the evening. And again, we're talking about Brother Omawali Africa. He's going to be joining us in a few moments. And then, oh, I forgot to mention, a little later on, we're going to be talking with, that's how I got on the role of politics or politics. We're going to be talking with a sister who's actually running for president. Yeah. I mean, really, she is. She ran for governor. And, I mean, she got a whole lot of votes, believe me. It was really interesting. Anyway, she's running for president now, and she's going to be sharing with us a conference that she recently attended that dealt with empowering African people throughout the African diaspora. So she's going to be sharing that information with us very shortly, and I'm talking about Dr. Carlita Atwater. So tonight should be pretty interesting, and that puts it mildly. So let me see. If I see Brother Omawali in queue. Brother Omawali, I forgot to mention to you, if you can hear me, you need to press 1 so I'll have a easier time in seeing you there. Other than that, I have to kind of scroll through a bunch of stuff. Okay, great. Great, great, great. Okay, so family, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk a bit about last night's fundraiser for Dr. Matula Shakur and why you all hopefully will continue to assist in whatever way, because this brother, our elder now, really needs our support and deserves it, needless to say. This is why I was, you know, very adamant in what I said last night about how black folks were missing in action. They really should have been there last night, and particularly the ones who did not do anything behind the scenes, because sometimes people do that, and that's cool. But, you know, people should have been there last night to a greater extent from Philly. Anyway, let's go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Brother Omawali Africa again. For if you're not familiar with him, it's time that you are. Not only is he a writer and certainly what we call an artivist, not just an activist, but an artivist, because he's also a poet. And at this point, he's, you know, making some films. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too. So let's open up the live line, and let's bring in Brother Omawali Africa, and let's get down with the get down. Hey, brother, how are you this evening?
Peace, peace. I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, you know, as I always say, as long as I can wake up and continue to do this fight for justice and liberation for our people and make some headway, then it's going to always be a good day.
Indeed. As long as we breathe and we still win it.
Got that right. All right, my brother. So listen, before we go into you sharing with some of the work that you're presently doing, some of the work that you have been doing, but also, of course, some of the work that you're presently doing. What was your thoughts about last night's event for Dr. Mutula Shakur?
I thought it was good. I felt like it was well attended. You know, I've never been to too many events down at the Rotunda, and when I pulled up, I think Umar was speaking when I actually walked into it. But like ultimately, you know, the usual suspects that you tend to see, who are the supporters, you know, are always there. You know, but the broader community, you know, isn't as engaged. But I think that Baba Sekou Odinga actually spoke to that during the panel. He talked about the responsibility of educating folks, because folks don't have an awareness. You know, there are some folks and young people who don't even know who Mutula Shakur is. So, you know, we have that responsibility to educate them, you know, on that history and why it's a necessity that we fight to bring home our political prisoners, but more importantly, why it's a necessity that we support them. You know, he talked about, you know, when Mutulu came home, you know, he didn't come home to no pension. You know, he didn't come home to a stipend and no check. So it's very important that we, the community, that we come out and that we show love and we kind of put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, the only thing that I would add to that in terms of, I mean, it was attended, but for me it wasn't well attended to the degree that it should have been. And you're right, Baba Sekou Odinga is correct. But on the other side of that is, because, you know, being from Philly, I know who a lot of the players are. And when I say players, I'm talking about people who talk black. So even though, yes, we have to educate those that don't know, there was a whole lot of folks that did know, that do know.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And so, and that's who I'm referring to. That I'm pretty on point or very clear about who I'm talking about or what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is there are people who definitely knew about him, definitely knew about Sister Asada. There's folks, you know, RBG that know about him, that know about Tupac. And so my point is, you know, see, I'm not letting folks get away with this any longer, because it's really injurious to us all. And one of the reasons why younger folks don't know is because the folks that do know are not telling them, or not, as you would say, or not educating them. But you know, it's deeper than that. And so that's why it's really important for me to make certain that, you know, people really know and understand what's really going on, to lessen and also to, you know, kind of push to the side our struggles, you know, both past and present. And so, you know, that's my spin on that, brother. I'm very disappointed in people that, who I know here in Philadelphia, who, you know, they got Marcus Garvey posters up in their house, and Malcolm, and all the books and all of that, right? And at the same time, you know, when it comes to situations like this, just like with Mumia, they MIA, missing in action.
Yeah. You know, it feels like, you know, I'm almost hesitant to even call what we have going on a movement, because, you know, because a movement has a certain, you know, reflection. You know, a movement is a collective of organizations, you know what I mean? It's institutions that are actually reflecting power. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's not necessarily what we have. I think that we are, you know, the grassroots is deeply fragmented. I think that people are fatigued. You know, some people have a desire to support, but it's like we don't see examples of power. So when I say, you know, you see the usual suspects, you see the people who have committed their lives, you know, to this struggle. And not everybody has made that commitment, you know. So anytime you go to an event, you know, for our political prisoners, you're going to see, you know, Empress Fille there. You're going to see Pan Africa there. You're going to see Brother Razakhan there are certain people mm-hmm. who you're going to see at all of these events, but the broader community is just not attached, you know, because there, you know, I would say that that there is no movement. There are those of us who are mm-hmm. working on projects and working on programs with the goal of inspiring people to get involved. Mm-hmm. Right? There are those of us yeah. who are working to build, you know, new coalitions and new fronts that can actually advance things forward. But that takes work. It takes energy. It takes resources. And so much of our, you know, of our resources kind of like quartered off into the non-for-profit sector or on the college campuses or in these, you know, fronts that look like movement work, but it's really moving our people in a different direction. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of fragmentation, and also a lot of frustration. So I get it. I definitely get it.
Right. No doubt. Well, you know, I always tell people don't get confused with me. I'm not frustrated. I you know, I bring, and I'm not suggesting that you're saying that, but I oftentimes hear people, you know, say, well, you know, I know you like, you know, you're angry or you're, I'm like, no, don't get it twisted. I mean, I'm used to this stuff at this stage of the game, but I would be remiss if I did not, you know, convey what I know. And that's been part of the problem too. Even when I was coming up, that was happening, meaning, you know, people did not really kind of share some real kinds of things. And so you end up getting sidetracked and jackslapped with stuff because you really wasn't given that kind of insight. And lastly on mm-hmm. that, the one thing, and I wish I had mentioned it last night, you know, the brothers and sisters prior to me and you coming into the movement, they had study groups. They had study groups. There was requirements for, you know, books and other things that you had to read, that you had to, you know, discuss, and so forth and so on. Most groups and organizations today, they don't have that. So again, the level of commitment, needless to say, because you didn't even have the commitment, you know, the way things are now, they didn't even have the commitment to really, you know, critique or examine certain fundamental things, you know. And so here we are now, you know, with this situation with a lot of hoopla and a lot
yeah,
of, you
I
know,
mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a lot of creativity to find a way to get folks back engaged, because unfortunately, you know, during the so-called the Black Lives Matter era, right, from Trayvon all the way up until now, I think that what happened was, you know, when we let certain folks come in and hijack the movement, people on the ground, what they saw was, okay, somebody get murdered, we go out and protest. Some people get jobs, some people get checks, some people, I mean, like they get in position, and the same thing just happens over and over and over and over again. It's like it feels like the protesting is almost like a hustle for people to put themselves in position, you know what I mean, so that they can, you know, so they can eat, you know, off of death, off of murder. And I think that the more and more people saw that, and the more and more people saw, you know, no change was coming. And then they saw a lot of their efforts being pushed into, well, just go out and vote. You know, go vote for Biden, go vote for Kamala. I think the people have just gotten, like, frustrated and moved away. So it's not that people don't want to come out, and it's not that they don't want to support. I think that they feel like their efforts aren't making an impact. So, you know, I heard you talking about, like that civil education, right? Well, just think about, like, the apathy that exists in our community when it comes to, like, voting, right? And why is that? It's because people vote election after election after election, and they don't see anything happen. So as a result, they say, you know what? Well, I'm not going to vote because it don't make a difference. Well, it's the same thing with, like, movement work. People have gone out into, like, to protest, and they've joined organizations, and things just get stale and stagnant. And then folks say, well, I'm doing all of this, and nothing happens, right? So you got to really find a way to inspire people, to get them back involved, and to show them where we can secure wins, right? So that's why, you know, one of the projects that I'm working on right now, the Hannibal project, you know, I tell people all the time, it's not just a documentary. Like, we're really trying to inspire a movement. You know, we're really trying to build unity, you know, around this conversation that relates to food sovereignty, right? Because you
right.
know you really can't have food sovereignty without land sovereignty. So it always goes back to that conversation of free to land. But
that's right.
In terms of pushing people in that direction, if you can
right.
show them that they are you know basically a week away from starvation, and if they don't do something about the land situation and get some type of control over the food systems they depend on, to start to
mm-hmm.
push people to actually get up and get involved, like those who want to survive,
right?
Because survival is a motivator, you know. Because self-preservation is the first law of nature. So when you can
right.
show people, you know, that their survival is in question, that their very life is in question, you can point that out to them, then, you know, hopefully
right.
you can get people inspired to work again.
And, you know, I'm really glad to hear you say that, my brother, because what I realize is that, you know, our movement and struggle, et cetera, have different dimensions. And so needless to say, of course, there's going to be various elements and various approaches, and I think that's a beautiful thing. You know, for me, at this point in time, what I'm beginning to kind of have a more position on is the fact that, you know, after looking at least 100 years now, that a lot of things have been kind of made pretty clear. And so, you know, to not focus on nation building in the context of us having our own everything, you know, it kind of is, you know, we keep going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, when I talk to my elders, Baba Bilal Sunni Ali and Baba Abiodun and others, I remember, and I mean, I've heard them say the same things that we're saying, you know, and putting the emphasis on, as you're saying, land and other things. So did they. So did H. Rat Brown, or so did, you know, Willie Ricks, or so did Kwame Ture, or others. My point is, we don't seem to really move this thing forward to the degree where the focal points are really not being, you know, put into a more holistic kind of context. And as a result, each generation ends up kind of doing the same thing that the previous generations were doing. Because like you said earlier, you know, free to land. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, right here in Philadelphia, we had President Imari Obadeli, who was one of the first presidents of the Republic of New Africa. That started over 50
yep.
years ago. And their main thing was what? And with your documentary, of course, you talk about Brother Afrique, Hannibal Afrique. So
mm-hmm.
my point is, you know, we got to look at this in another kind of way also. What has already happened, the struggles that have already led to that, and where we're at today, we COINTELPRO and various kinds of, you know, actions certainly hindered, you know, our capability to advance and move forward. But at the same time, my point is this: a lot has happened in the past 100 years, and for people now not to at least know or understand or have at least grasped a few things, we better look at that a little differently. Because
now, I'm
just gonna say, from the time of the Honorable Marcus Garvey up to the present day, and particularly with technology, the capability of information to be circulating and so forth, I'm just saying, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you got. I think that, you know, one of the major issues is you have to examine the way that generations get cut off from their history, because that's how you kill people. That's how you enslave people, right? You have to cut them off from information about their past, right? And I ain't just talking about, like, you know, your great past. I'm talking about, like, you know, the decades that have passed, right? This past 100 years. Because if you think about it, you know, I'm 39, right? But when I graduated from high school, I graduated from high school the same year that they passed No Child Left Behind. So that was 2001, George Bush passed No Child Left mm-hmm. Behind. So if you mm-hmm. think about it, 2001 to 2023, right, you'll be what, 22 years old right now?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
a generation of young people who literally went through a public school system that miseducated them in a way that we've never been miseducated before. Right, so that's just one generation, right? But if you think about my generation, right, the generation born into the 80s, some of us had parents who were in the movement, so we got a connection. Some of us, because of, you know, like things like the Afrocentric and African-centered movement, you know, we moved mm-hmm. in the direction of wanting to learn about our history and learn about our past, and that pushed us into doing movement work. But for the most part, a huge part of our generation, you know, got cut off. And this is, we talk about like COINTELPRO, but we got to talk about the results of it. You know, like we got to talk about how they dismantled the movement, you know, beyond, you know, imprisoning our fighters and killing off our warriors. We got to talk about like the attack on the mind, like how they replaced the revolutionary with the pimp. You know, how you get these black exploitation films in the 70s, and then in the 80s you get your Scarface
right.
and your mafia movies, and then in the 90s, you know, you get your Menace to Society. Like, all of this is impacting the consciousness of two and three generations, right? So when we're looking at today in 2023, we literally have people who just don't know, because there's been so much pollution of the mind, right, over this past 40-year period. So what we're trying to do is, like, we're trying to, you know, rebirth or breathe life back into a people who are literally dead and disconnected and fragmented and cut up into many different pieces. And that's the frustration that I have. You understand what I'm saying? So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in terms of trying to achieve that, because there's not a collective consciousness like there once was, you know, and I think that we really, really saw that, you know, with like the Trayvon Martin situation, right? Because
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you had a situation where, you know, one of the major goals of COINTELPRO was to completely destroy black nationalism. So you had a
mm-hmm.
situation where you had people who were educated on college campuses. And if you look at college campuses over the past 40 years, it is all the way against black nationalism, right? So you
mm-hmm.
have people who came off the campus that had this black feminist orientation or this black queer orientation, and that was
mm-hmm.
their organizing framework. So when we saw like the start of Black Lives Matter, there's a reason why it was black feminist and black queer and anti-black nationalist, right? It was anti-nation building. It was anti-black
mm-hmm.
nationalist. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this
mm-hmm.
this is
mm-hmm.
the consciousness that organized the collective over the past 10 years, right? And these are the people
mm-hmm.
who they put in place just to continue to mislead and misdirect and to widely confuse. So I'm seeing all of this, and it makes me say, okay, well, I have to work in small groups, right? And we have to do the work that has not been done in order to rebuild. And a big part of that, to be honest, is doing the work on self, you know, because there's some internal, like, healing work that as a community, it plays a big role in terms of why it's hard for us to come together. Because even when we
mm-hmm.
do come together, the few of us that do exist, you start to find the personal issues, the ego issues, and that's because people are
mm-hmm.
sick. You know, you're trying to organize
mm-hmm.
with sick
mm-hmm.
people. We all, collectively, we understand the problem. But we can't figure out
right.
why we can't work together, and that's because that sickness within us, we ain't dealt with that yet either. So it's a multifaceted problem that we're up against.
Right. So, and I definitely agree with most of that, if not all of it. The only thing that I would say, though, is, you know, that what you just mentioned or indicated is something that has pretty much, at least in this past 100 years, which is what I look at in terms of trying to evaluate things. But that's to me, that's the norm. And what I mean by that is every 20, 30 roughly years, the same thing kind of happens and repeats. So even though, as you mentioned, you know, there was a decade or a generation that went through ABNRC, well, if you rewind that, go back, you're going to have a very similar situation. It'll be different, of course, because, you know, it's a different era. But there was an era where the miseducation was just as pervasive, and folks didn't have a clue. I mean, literally had no clue. Africa? About what that really meant to us and representing all that. But my point is that we always had a spirit of resistance, regardless of what we didn't know or did know, regardless if you had a Du Bois or a Garvey, regardless if you had Kwame Ture. So my point is each generation or every other generation has a similar chaotic or diversive or whatever, divertive situation. It's different because, yes, you know, that era will represent that era. But the point is the problems, the incapabilities or the this or the that is still there every single time, you see. So none of that changes. And in the reality of us being sick, well, of course, we're in America. And so, to me, ain't going to be a whole lot of, you know, beyond a certain point, you know, ain't going to be no whole lot of whatever, because you're in a belly of a beast. And so what's going on there is maggots and pus and all other kind of stuff that we have to navigate through, you see.
Absolutely.
So, right. So that's why, and I get what you're saying about working on self. And again, for me, the danger, and don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I've watched people, my brother, who went from being fiery and, you know, whatever, and have used this concept now, you know, healing or whatever, and that's really their modality. And what I mean by that is, it's almost like other stuff is voided out. It's just voided out when it comes to really doing things. And I know that's not you, because you're definitely doing stuff. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm careful about how I advocate certain things, because a good percentage of the people that I know who are talking about working on themselves, they ain't doing nothing else.
Yeah, and so you see what I'm saying?
And so we gotta be real, you know. So with me, I'm ambidextrous. What that means is, I have a right hand and a left hand, a right eye and a black. And so as I work on me constantly in trying to be a better black woman, try to, you know, get rid of some of my idiosyncrasies or hang on, da da da. That ain't got nothing to do with, well, no, it has something to do with, I'm still going to be doing that other stuff. I'm still going to be trying to kick some butt. See?
As you
could. Right. But I'm saying, and this is what our ancestors did, or at least some of them that we are familiar with. So, again, when I look at and think about people like Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker, and just, you know, so many others. Again, there are people who did not have education or weren't exposed to other kinds of interactions, but they had something else, you see, and they demonstrated that. And that's that spirit that you see that I'm talking about.
And that that's what I'm saying, got to be reborn in our people, because it's been bred out of so many of us. Like, I mean, so many of us with integration, you know, you first got to get people to see that they own a plantation, because so many people believe that they're already free. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's a major part. That's a major stumbling block that we have as a people. So many of us are like, oh, well, I'm integrated. Like, I can be Jay-Z, I can be Oprah, I can be LeBron, you know. So when you're talking about, like, getting free, people are looking at you, like, just confused. They don't understand it.
I know that's right. All right, my brother. Well, let's fast forward some. And you mentioned earlier about the projects that you're working on. And there's one, of course, in particular, and that deals with, you know, the food issue, the land issue. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, so I have a project that I'm working on right now. It's called Hannibal, the Fight for Food Sovereignty in the South. And it recounts the history, the long and detailed history of our struggle to feed ourselves in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it really, you know, I'm reluctant to start the story in slavery, right? Because, you know, Dr. John Henry Clark says whenever we are talking about, you know, our history, like we don't never start with slavery, right? So we always got to remember that African people gave the gift of agriculture, right? The agricultural sciences
mm-hmm.
is something that we gave to the world, right?
Right.
We are the mothers and fathers. We are the first planters, the first growers, right? The first harvest, right, was reaped by us. So
yes.
We have to understand that. But
yes.
If we're talking about on these shores, you know, I'm telling a story, you know, or looking to tell a story that connects our ancestral maroons, right, to our present day, you know,
mm-hmm.
urban growers, right? Because
mm-hmm.
what the maroons understood is that in order for them to be free, in order for them to have a maroon settlement, they had to be able to feed themselves, right?
Right.
So food was sacred to them, right? That rice crop
yeah.
was sacred to them, right? The things that they were able to plant and harvest, right? Because you had
mm-hmm.
to eat. You understand what I'm saying? So that
yeah.
struggle from during slavery, where you know where food has always been used as a political tool, as a way of control and domination, right? To even during the period of Reconstruction, to the period of sharecropping, right? The struggle for us to hold on to our land. The fact, you know, that we've lost, you know, nearly 16 million acres. You talk about this 100-year period. You know, like it's been a struggle. You know, if you want to talk about the Nation of Islam, you know, them buying land and getting their cattle poisoned. You want to talk about the Republic of New Africa, you know, the RNA 11 trying to get land down there in Mississippi and having to go up. You know what I mean? It's a long history of us trying to pursue self-determination, right, of us really working to figure out. I mean, even – you know, if you want to take it back to what they call Field Order Number 15, you know, that happened because, you know, you had 19 preachers who met with General Sherman following the Civil War, and he asked them, he said, hey, how do y'all want to live? Do y'all want to live integrated amongst the whites? You know, do y'all want to live on colonies by yourselves? And they
right.
said, we want to live by ourselves. They said, give us land.
Right.
If we have land, we can grow our food, we can take care of ourselves. So, you know, this has been our fight from Fannie Lou Hamer to Booker T. Washington to the Honorable
yep.
Elijah Muhammad to present day. This has just been a consistent fight. And what I'm trying to do is just tie that story together because we had a situation now where, you know, we're nearly 100% dependent on this corporate capitalist food system for our survival.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that
yes.
food system doesn't nourish us. It's only giving us poison. The products that it's giving us is the reason why we got so many goddamn ailments in our community in the first place. But in the second place, I mean, when you're 100% dependent on another group of people to feed you, you know, you may as well be enslaved, right? And that's what Garvey told us. He said that any leadership that teaches you to depend on another people is a leadership that will enslave you. Well, right now, we are literally 100% dependent on this other community for our food. You understand what I'm saying? Like, and that's a problem. You know, so I'm trying to highlight that, you know what I mean? Because things are only going to continue to get worse, so we don't really take up this fight for land, for survival, for food, for production.
Right.
Then we ain't got much longer. We don't
right.
have much longer. And right now, I think that there is an opportunity for us to make some changes and move things in the right direction. But you need projects like this that can inform people and help to shift their consciousness in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I created the Recharge Genocide 21 project, and one of the 21 areas is, of course, you know, the justice for our black farmers and land owners. And so one of the sessions that we'll be talking about in July for the Queen Mother One Weekend is that reparatory justice. And again, I don't just talk about reparations, you know, by itself. We put it in a formula, and we call it reparatory justice. So there's like four different areas that we're focusing on. So reparations is one of them, but the other one is restitution. The third one is retribution, and then the fourth one is restoration. And each one of those have an area, is an actual area in law. So my point is that, you know, we just don't want money, or we just don't want a check. We want land. In our position, as we move forward, the 21 areas, land, you know, there's some things that can be obtained in a more immediate time, you know, as we proceed with the struggle of reparations, et cetera. And that is, again, the obtainment of land. There's still quite a bit of land here in the U.S. that's not being utilized.
Exactly.
So our position is that is one of the things that we can begin to obtain as a first step, and that is land.
That has to be the step. I mean, and all of our, you can say all of our ancestors knew it, you know, whether it be Booker T. Washington or Honorable Elijah Muhammad or Malcolm X, like all of them understood that. And our people have been confused and cut off from that history. So we have a responsibility to present that history to them in a way that engages their consciousness and gets them to become active participants in their own liberation. Right. So that's what this project is, you know, and we're using Baba Hannibal, you know, as a canvas to paint the picture. You know what I mean? Because some of the work that he was doing down in Mississippi related to land and food is critical. So it's like, well, how do we regenerate that work for this generation? And the best way, you know, one of the greatest tools that we have is the tool of storytelling. I mean, that's what African people do. A story can really inspire and lift, you know, and get us to get our act together. So that's, you know, that's what I'm doing, you know, the art of the story, to bring our story back for this current generation, to get them inspired to get involved and be active participants in our own liberation.
So what are some of the things, I know you're doing podcasts and lectures and so forth, you know, what are some of the ways that folks can get involved, can learn more? You know, tell us about that.
Yeah. So I think it was in Tony Martin's Race First, where he talked about when Garvey had the idea to create the UNIA, right, to do work to uplift the race. And it might be in Chapter 1 or Chapter 2 in Race First. Garvey talks about, he wanted to do this work, but in order to effectively do it, he needed to create a media platform for himself so that he could communicate, you know, his program and his agenda, you know, to the collective. And he did that, you know, by creating the Negro World, one of the most successful publications that have ever been created, you know, here in Black America. So understanding that and understanding the media that we have at our disposal today, you know, for the past, I want to say 2.5, maybe 3 years, I've been working to build a media imprint, you know, using the tools at my disposal. So I've done that so that I can engage certain conversations to meet people where they are. But for, you know, I think that where I am now, I'm more so using my platform is really focused on education. Right. So I created an online community called the African War College. And we use that vehicle for political education, you know, to help bring people into consciousness. So we have that. We have the African War College. And I recently, back in January, we entered into a partnership with another community, Tahuti Ma'at. So the African War College and Tahuti Ma'at, we collectively have a community known as the Amos Wilson Collective, Right.
Oh, okay.
So we are holistically touching,
okay.
you know, every degree, you know, around the full, you know, 360 degree. Like we're holistically
yeah.
touching every degree that's related to our liberation. So that's the work that I'm most excited about, you know, the Amos Wilson Collective and the African War College. And then, of course, I got this documentary project. But all these
mm-hmm.
things for me are just pieces, like, in a larger puzzle. That
okay.
are moving to advance us, you know, right, towards self-reliance, towards
yes.
self-determination. Like, we got to be able to demonstrate it. Like, we
Absolutely.
Can talk about it all day, but we have to be able to actually demonstrate that we can achieve these things. So that's what
Absolutely.
Every project that I'm working on is moving towards, like, actually
okay.
showing a model of it working. Right, and
sure.
that takes time. That's not a 1 year thing. That's not a 2 year thing. So I have a long term vision, and every project that I'm involved in is working towards that vision.
All right. So my brother, let folks know how they can, hear you, communicate with you, follow whatever. Let them know how they can stay in touch with you.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Pardon me. I'm sorry about that, y'all. I'm going on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, across all the socials at Omowale Africa. I'm also on the website, omowaleafrica.com. But if you want to know anything that I'm working on, there's a link in all of my social media bios. The latest project, the Hannibal Project, if you click that link, it'll be the first, I guess, selection that you can select. You'll see it right there. Just hit that link in any of my social media bios, omowaleafrica.com or omowaleafrica.com, and you can just, you know, keep up with anything that I have going on.
Okay, great, great, great. Well, brother, I know you are very, very busy, so I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. And by the way, the sister that's getting ready to come on now, she has literally accomplished some of what we've talked about. So when you talk about, you know, setting the example, this sister has acres of land. She has the capability to feed hundreds of people at any given time, and so forth and so on. So you know, if you can hang around for a moment, I'd love you to meet Dr. Atwater's in the house. We're going to bring her in next, family. But listen, we've been talking. Go ahead. What was you going to say, brother?
No, you good. I said, yeah, I'm gonna keep listening here.
Oh, okay, cool, okay.
All right,
family, listen, we've been talking with Brother Omowale Africa, who's based here in Philly, but, of course, does a lot of traveling, a lot of research, and is definitely on a mission, as many of us are. But, again, it's always good to, you know, to connect and to hear with some of our family, some of our people, what they're actually doing. And by the way, I forgot to ask, how can people support? That's really important.
Oh, we got the crowdfund right in my bio. So if you go to any of
okay.
my bios, like I said, across social media, Omowale Africa, I hit the link in my bio, and the first thing you'll see there is the Hannibal crowdfund. You can definitely support.
All right. Wonderful. All right, family. Well, listen, you know, what we do here is have conversation, but y'all know the other part of that is direct action. And so we bring you the information, but not just, talk. We have to make sure that we encourage everyone to the best of our ability to do something, get involved, take some action. That's what this program is about. It's not just about the conversation part. And many of you, you know that you have demonstrated those, you know, philosophies and concepts, and we're very thankful for you doing so. So with that said, I want to thank our brother again for joining us. And one quick other question, brother. You were doing like some weekly sessions in the park with folk, you know, to work out and, you know, keep them healthy and so forth. Will you be resuming that this summer?
Yeah, so the training with Cobra, we got to figure out how we're going to facilitate it this summer, because this project, as you stated, I'm doing a lot of traveling right now. So with the training station that we had in the park, you know, I pretty much was the one who would pull up every Saturday to set it up. But I know I'm going to be moving around a lot this summer trying to get this project done. So we just got to figure out how we're going to facilitate it.
Okay. All right. Well, definitely keep us posted on that. And
for sure.
You know, let's see what we can come up with. All right, my brother, again,
sure.
Asante Sana, thank you much.
Asante Sana, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you.
Oh, absolutely. Black at you. All right, family, we're gonna move forward. And again, for those who vote, like I said, we need to make sure that we begin to look at that a little closer and begin to do it a little more intelligently and a little more strategically. And so that's what our session's coming up next week to, and that is we're introducing our concept of Black Poli-Sci 101 and civics classes so that in our communities, in the hood, here in Philly, and of course nationwide because we're going to be Zooming and some other stuff with the streaming, but we want to break some of this stuff down, what it actually is and isn't, so that people are not just blindly or based on, you know, that's what my mom did or my grandmom or grandpa, and so I'm going to do it too. No. No, them days is over, y'all. It's got to be about what are these folks going to do for us. We got to be asking those kind of questions and create the mechanisms to begin to hold people a little more accountable. So we'll talk more about that at another time. But right now we're going to go to our live line, and our sister has been with us before, but certainly she's going to share with us now. A conference took place this past week, and it focused on the empowerment of the African diaspora, our people throughout the African diaspora. So right about now, we're going to bring in Carlita Atwater, who, as I mentioned, by the way, is also running for president. Now, I know for some of y'all that sounds real far-fetched, but, well, needless to say, y'all remember Shirley Chisholm, right? Again, sometimes things have to happen for other things to happen. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Let's open up this live line and let's welcome our sister, Dr. Carlita Atwater. Greetings to you, my sister. How are you this evening?
I am blessed. How are you, sister?
You know, doing what we do.
All right.
So you just, before we go into telling about what's going on with the campaign, I know you just came from attending a conference. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, actually, the conference was held at my Cucutana African American History and Culture Museum. So we had about 500 or more brothers and sisters from across diaspora to come to this African diaspora empowerment conference. And so we had sisters and brothers from Ghana, Senegal, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Nepal, Libya, Liberia, Kenya, Ethiopia, Somalia, Tanzania, Jamaica, Haiti, a couple of sisters and brothers from, I think it was Peru and Belize, and also, yeah, Jamaica. So it was a beautiful encounter. We're trying to put together a strategic political plan of action. And so we have so many moving parts going on across the United States, and it's trying to encompass other countries. And so when you start thinking about the United States engaging into other countries, you have to understand why the engagement now. So soon we forget about when the Haitians was trying to come over here to America, this great country called America. They turned them around. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I surely do.
Yes. So now they want to embrace Africa. Mm-hmm. So, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running for president, because we have to wake our people up now. We have to stop being naive when it comes to politics. And I'm not talking about Democrat or Republican or independent or socialist or whatever the case may be. I could care less about your political affiliation. My affiliation is human rights and being
that's
a
right.
decent human being and standing for the people. So that's what makes me a little bit different than most politicians. Even when I ran for the first African-American woman to run for the governor of the state of Tennessee, I ran as a grassroots person, and
mm-hmm.
I ran on the slogan, putting people back into politics. And I'm still that person. So it's going to take a grassroots person to come in and shake this system up, this corrupt system of the United States. And it's going to take a person bold, unbought, and unbossed to do that. I am that person. Now, you know, one may say, well, are you going to be competing with Trump? I don't even want to discuss that man. He never should have been a president. So that's on them right there. I'm going to stay focused on the people. Now, our present president, I'm researching him because of some of the things that he's trying to do right now when it comes to the motherland. That's my concern
mm-hmm.
right there, because we have to be careful when we let people sell us a pipe dream. Because I listen, I study everything, I dissect and analyze everything that he's saying. I even analyze and dissect everything that President Obama did and said. And so where are we now? We have a so-called black president. Now we have a president that said that the black folks need him. And so where are we at? And so I try to speak truth to power. That's just who I am. That's in my DNA. I do not care if someone votes for me or do not vote for me, because it don't lack me. So we have to get past this personal foolishness,
mm-hmm.
and we need to take care of this. Now, when I ran for governor in the state of Tennessee, Tennessee is a red state.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I live in a predominant black city, Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And Memphis is known for Soulville, but in my opinion, it should be Slaveville, because you had the first African-American woman to run for governor that was speaking the language of the people. And one
right.
of the things that I was going to do is bring reparations to the state of Tennessee, bring
right.
equity to the state of Tennessee. So what I learned from that particular, because I'm not a politician, I am a community advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't even refer to myself as a politician, because I don't think that's what I am. I'm just
mm-hmm.
trying
mm-hmm.
to get in position to turn this train around by any means necessary.
All right.
And so that African Diaspora Empowerment Conference, we came together because we're trying to circumvent some things before it happens. And I'm going to try to get into the ear of as many African leaders as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they should not do is fall for the okie-dokie of what a president or whomever trying to do. Now, we know that, you know, even the United States launched a war against Somalia. So we know that the United States have a history of doing things, not doing things in Africa. So
mm-hmm.
the question would be, why now? You have always had starvation in Africa. You have always had Africa being behind the curveball when it comes to economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Why now? So we understand what the game is. So what the United States is trying to do is trying to circumvent what the Chinese have done already, have implanted
mm.
in Africa. And
mm-hmm.
actually, I would have told Africa not to let no one in because they are the greatest continent in the world with the resources. That's what the people want. And so you have all types of mineral over there. You have the lithium that they want for the electric cars. The state of Tennessee put billions of dollars to this company called the Blue Oval. Well, the Blue Oval is owned and operated by people that do not look like us. So when I was running for governor, the first thing I said was, before we let any Blue Oval come into our community, we need a community benefit agreement. What is this company going to give to the people? Now, they didn't listen to me, because one thing about black folks sometimes, my grandmother used to always tell me, a hard head make a soft butt. Sometimes we do not listen to reason. And so I was telling them that they need, because if you look at that area, Hardeman County, Haywood County, that area is where most black farmers and people, black people own land. So what they tried to do, they tried to come through the back door. When I say they, the political leaders in Tennessee, tried to come through the back door and take this black town charter. But that didn't work because we stood against that. So now they're coming back now and trying to use eminent domain to take these people's farmland and their property to drive highways so they can make lanes and streets or roads to get to this Blue Oval company. So for some reason, we do not want to be proactive. And so genocide keeps happening to us over and over and over again. And I think about 5 years ago when I fought for against the Memphis 3.0. That was a 25-year plan in the city of Memphis. And that plan has caused abundance of genocide on the people. And even right in their face, they still smiling like modern-day slaves and pickaninnies and hate me because I fought against something that was going to benefit them. Something is wrong with that picture. So I came to the realization that we have a lot of mental illness in our community. We have a lot of self-hatred in our community.
Right.
And not by our own doing. Historically, we've been taught to hate our people and to hate who we are as a people. So I don't know how we're going to transcend from that, because we went down a road that I don't think is going to be repaired by just talking. You know, I have been a person of action. You know, when I had put $150,000 into a black neighborhood that's poverty stricken. And so how much more do you have to do to make these people understand that this is serious, that this fight we're in is serious? And I never will forget the words of Sister Soldier. She said in the latter part of the 80s, she said, "You are at war with or without your participation." And so we're at war, and so many of us do not know we're in battle. We're in a battle for our life, a battle for our children, our families, our businesses, our survival in this country. And so that's one of the reasons why I am running as the first African-American woman from the South as far as state of Tennessee for the president of the United States. And I'm going to do that. For anything I do it very strategically. So I will be announcing my, officially announcing my campaign on Juneteenth, June the 19th.
All right.
Okay. I'm doing that strategically for a reason. And I'll be standing there with shotguns in my hand and a whip in my other hand. I'm doing it for a reason. Because when I ran for governor, I went into the election commission and I had some shackles, whip, and I popped that whip in the election commission. They didn't know what to do. And so the security guard was looking at me. The people up in court, they wouldn't come out. They didn't say, like my grandmother said, they didn't say a mumbling word to me. And I went on about 20 minutes because Harriet Tubman taught me that. You know, Harriet Tubman said she could have freed a lot more slaves. They only knew they were slaves. So that's the language that people understand. And I'm willing to speak the language that my people understand by and by. So, but in this conference, and it was very intriguing, we putting a plan together because it's people planning and been planning for a long time behind our back. While we're sitting up philosophizing and talking, these people have a clear agenda of where they're going. And it's to really annihilate us and to get rid of us when it comes to black folks in this country. And they show us this every day because in the state of Tennessee, we have what you call Tennessee Assistance for Needy Families. And the governor here, he withheld $739 million from needy families during a pandemic. Now, what I have researched, this is going on all across the United States. And they're using our children through DHS. They're using a juvenile in a prison system. We do not understand what is getting ready to come to us as black folks in this country. And you better believe that. And one of my slogans is we play too much and we stay too long. So we dissected Friday and Saturday because, you know, Biden put out, he put it out in 2021, but it was the U.S. strategy toward sub-Saharan Africa. And he talked about all the things that he want to do for Africa. And ironically, his opening statement was, we believe in the nations of Africa, in the continent, wide. Spirit of entrepreneurship and innovation. And through those challenges ahead, they are great. There's no doubt that our nations, our people, the African Union, will up for the task. Now, did Africa just start being great? We are the cradle civilization. So that's double talk right there. And so I tell any African leader, anyone that's going to listen to me, you better slow your roll because it's a game going on. You've been doing just fine by yourself. And so, again, you shouldn't have let those Chinese get in there because they got something to deal with now. Because when you start letting people come in and buy up your land and oil, So you have to be careful about that. And ironically, I be over in Africa enough to know that some of them are so brainwashed and whitewashed that they are so far gone now. We're in a bad dire strait when it comes to our African people and black folks in America. We have to turn this thing around. If not for us, the next generation. And so that is the reason why I am running for the president of the United States. I also noticed Biden had apologized to the African leaders and what he called the unimaginable cruelty of slavery. And he also was going to offer them $55 billion. Now, wait a minute, my sister. What about the reparation? What about the lynching and the Jim Crow laws and the rapes and the burning of houses and killing of black folks over on American soil? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
well,
he,
you know, Dr. Edward, you know, Dr. Edward, I think you saw where when you mentioned that, I have to get this in. I think you saw where we will have a conversation with Sister Ramona Africa on Friday. So when you talk about what they've done in this land, I mean, that's a perfect example. And that wasn't too long ago, by the way, that a bomb was dropped right here in Philadelphia. 60 more than 60 homes went up in flames, and 11 people were killed, 5 of them children. And so that is one of the examples that we're going to be presenting in terms of genocide in this day and age. Clearly, right in the community, a black community here in Philadelphia. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct. Can now literally, you know, give the evidence of more present day of what these people have done.
Yeah, well, you know, even, and it is so, it's multi-layered. For example, you know, they are taking black folks' property as we speak. Not only their farmland, but just the basic human rights of housing. And so when you take away people housing, then you take away generational wealth.
Mm-hmm,
and then you have
mm-hmm.
some African-American people living in dilapidated houses where you have holes in the roof and rats and roach infested. We're living worse than some slaves live back then. So my question would be, why is Biden addressing Africa when he's not even addressing poverty and homelessness, people dying on the streets of America? See, he's playing games.
Yeah.
He has pledged to give $55 billion in aid to Africa. Why not give $55 billion to the people that's struggling over in America? Playing games.
You know.
Because, see,
you
Africa has something he wants.
Oh, no doubt about it. But with that said, also, Dr. Edwarder, if this something happened last week, Sister Keisha, which is one of our you know, communications and research people, conveyed on her program the murder of a young brother. I think he was 30 years of age, just this past week in New York, and he was homeless. That's kind of how this all happened. He was on the subway, and apparently, you know, he was doing it often, you know, in order to get money, but he was homeless. And so he was like, you know, one of those performers or whatever, and that's how he would get money. But this time, a young ex-Marine put him in a chokehold and ended up killing him. Yeah, he was harassing people on the train. So going back to what you were saying about how we literally have homeless people who are, you know, just trying to survive day to day, and now, you know, as it seems, which we've known this for a while, because we've had a situation here in Philadelphia where there were so many homeless people being found dead, we were under the impression that possibly it was their organs that was being taken. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, well, and that's what you can't get the sisters and brothers here to open their eyes up to see, that you have just a modern day genocide on the people, but they refuse to look at it. Because, you know, I talk to people every day as a community advocate, and, well, you know, I just don't see color. I just want to ask you something. Color to you? Every day you walk out that door, color to you or your children or your grandchildren. If when they did the insurrection in Washington, D.C., and it was thousands of people, if not 10,000, up in Washington, D.C., breaking all windows, pooping on desks, they killed these people, killed some people up there. Now, let's go back.
Mm-hmm.
If there had been black folks up in Washington, D.C., it would have been Bloody Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to stop playing games with these people. And that's why I filed that $20 billion lawsuit in the city of Memphis. No one in the history have done that yet. because I wanted to send a message. It wasn't about winning the lawsuit. It's still going somewhere. But it was about setting that precedent to let them know, you're not going to do what you want to do to my people and think I'm just going to go away, period. Until we get serious and play political games, the political strategy they plan. See, right now, we are disfragmented when it comes to politics. Because I hear people say sometimes, well, you know, I don't really get into politics. Everything that you do in the United States is politics. Taxation without representation. Budgets are moral documents. How do you let your city council, your county commission, your mayor, your governor, your president do a budget, and the budget does not include black folks? That's immoral to do that. But people don't want to say anything. Well, you know, you don't need to say that. If not now, when? And so that's what I'm going to be talking about, things on this presidential campaign trail that other politicians do not want to talk about, including Biden and J.F. Kennedy. He getting in some of the things I'm going to talk about, because they ain't never been black a day in their life. They can't understand the life experience I'm talking about. So we have to address some issues. None of them want to talk about mass incarceration and the things that go on, you know, how people get raped, and COVID was transferred in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of people died in jail because they didn't get the help. I still didn't take the vaccination. I'm not that stupid, okay? experimental, you're not going to experiment on me, because at least I have a PhD in street sense. And so you're not going to be putting anything experimental in my body. And then when they fool the people to take it, then three months later, you need a booster. Well, I'm a registered nurse. What you need the booster for? Then the next 6 days, you need another booster. That should have been telling them something right there. And I won't say, because I don't know the statistic on it, but most of my friends that was injected with that vaccination came down with COVID. And not only once, but two or three times.
Mm.
And when I was running for governor, you know, they banned me from coming to my first debate, gubernatorial debate, because they said I need to take the vaccination. I said, well, you better Google me in or televise me in, because I'm not taking no vaccination. It's against my religion. I ran and grabbed me a wash towel real quick. You know, so what I have learned, and I'm glad I ran for governor, because I too was naive to politics. Mm-hmm. And I've been on this ground 45 years almost fighting this battle. But I didn't know the side of politics. Now I think I'm a polished person, and I know how that game is played. Now, I am the same person received 46,000 votes, and the Democratic Party would not even release the emails to me, would not let me come to the first debate, and I did not put not one political sign out. See, I tell people to run, especially grassroots people. If you don't have no money, so be it. See, they want you to believe that you have to be a millionaire to run. I have a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is one vote, one voice. So I'm going to get in the ears of the people. I'll be coming your way. I'm going to get in the ears of the people from a grassroots perspective and talk about things that Biden do not want to talk about. Now, I've been black all my life now. I know some black folks, because of the pigmentation of my skin and being a female, they're not going to vote for me. I understand that I'm not looking for their vote. Like the young folks say, you got to keep it moving. I'm not going to waste no time. Not going to waste no time on foolishness, because you can slow yourself down trying to pull people along.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing I learned running for governor. I'm not trying to pull nobody along. Because it's time out for us being jovial in our mindset. See, we need, it, again, it don't take no PhD. It don't take no master's. Just plain old common sense should tell you something is wrong with the picture.
That's
when
right.
all these attacks are going on against black folks, something should tell you something is wrong. I looked at Biden. He had the opportunity when Congress voted down, you know, they had a $1 billion lawsuit, and the Congress voted down. Now, Biden could have appealed that, but they let it slip through the cracks and did not do the appeal. That tells you a lot about what he care about black farmers to do that. So I'm going to be addressing that part right there. Oh, I have a Trump card now. I have some ammunition. Now, the game is when I get in, the Democratic Party have already embraced him as the nominee for the Democratic Party.
Right.
I don't care anything about that. I don't care anything about that. I'm my own part. I'm the People's Party. And that's how I'm going to address it. I bet you I'm avoiding hoods that might be too afraid to go in. I bet you that. I'll tell him to meet me at the crossroads. He's not going to do it. Have you been to Philly?
Not recently.
And when the last time he come, went there?
I'll tell you the truth. I don't even know. I don't, you, because for me, him coming to Philly is like Obama coming to Philly. When
right.
Obama came to Philly in that last term, I didn't, you know, it was like, okay. Again, either way, whenever they come, they do not go in black communities, at least not the communities that are considered the hood.
Right. See, I'm going in the hood, and I tell them to meet me at the crossroads. You know, my museum is right in the middle of the hood. Yeah, that conference was something to behold, and I think
wow.
I got to talk to them. And we're going to do this thing almost like where the domino effect. Because out of the 500 people, we put a plan together where those 500 people are going to reach out and touch 100 people, 1,000 people. And that's how we're going to metastasize this political strategic plan that we want to put in place.
Was any part of it recorded so that it could be shared with the general public?
Actually, it was recorded, but we had said we're not going to share because I always say that the true revolution will never be televised because some of the things that we've said in the meeting, we do not want anyone to know so they can't circumvent where we're going.
I didn't mean like those sessions. I meant maybe some general, you know, some basic general things.
Yes. I know we had a person there that was televising it. But
okay.
He knows not to release it out because we don't even want certain. Some people that was there, you would have been surprised who was there. And see, so we don't want people sliding up on them when they get to Haiti or get back to Africa and all that because you have some things going on in Africa right now. It's not really kosher. And so you have to be careful about that because some people's life can be put in danger. So this stuff you're ready to get serious. When America go to Africa trying to give all these $50 billion and this and that, that's when things really going to get serious. And people must understand that. So and I'm definitely taking this serious. That's why I'm trying to run for president. Will I win? I'm not for sure. And frankly, my dear, don't care. But I'm going to shine light on the atrocity that's going on in our community. See, when I ran for governor, it wasn't per se to win a position or
right.
a political office.
Right.
I brought out a lot of things during that campaign where it came out later on. I was telling them about, and I don't know if you remember, but the first thing on my political agenda was to do a, if I became governor in the first 90 days, I had promised the people that I was going to do a forensic investigation on all 95 counties in the state of Tennessee. Well, and some things I had told them about I want to investigate, one was the exposure of chemicals in predominant black neighborhoods, which this is going all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
I had identified that it's a black neighborhood here. It was called the Army Depot, was over there. But a lot of these black people have died with cancer. And
right.
The federal government gave, we have what you call EDGE, Economic Development Growth Engine. That's what governs the city. Now, the governor gave them $35 million to make it right to these black people in these black neighborhoods. Don't you know these nuts have given the federal money to all white community, Germantown, Collierville, Barley, and Arlington, predominant white affluent neighborhoods? How does that happen? Because we as a people do not pay attention.
Mm.
And so they got on it. They got on the TV talking. I said, these people don't understand but paper and pen. That's the only thing they understand in America. All the other talk don't mean anything to them. They'd have heard it before.
Right.
So it's just pitiful how we govern ourselves as a people now. So it's kind of pitiful, but we're going to get there by and by, one way or another.
So
I'm prepared to shed
blood. Dr. Edward, tell me, so the money that they gave to the white communities, what was that for?
See, that's how they come through the back door. Well, first of all, they should be in jail. To misappropriate federal funds, that is a crime. And so that money was here. And you'll find that if you study HUD, Housing Urban Development, HUD was put in place to circumvent some of the racial housing disparities that we had in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Right.
Well, if you go back and look at HUD, HUD now gives the money to the money that was earmarked to low and severely low income neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
They give the money to rich investors and developers now. All you have to do is follow the money and the money trail. They give it to the investors. So that's why you have out-of-town investors coming to Memphis and Philly and Harlem, Atlanta. And some of them they're giving to these bank owners. Because I can't think of the name of the bank now, but this bank is going in and buying all the houses in predominant black and underserved neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to build these houses that the average marginalized community cannot afford. When they used to paying like $600 for their their rent, now they're paying $1,800
or
$2,100. And they got this theory across the United States, build up, not out. What does that mean? That mean apartment. It does not mean affordable. If you look in every, I have studied about 25 comprehensive plan, city plan, Minnesota, Chicago, Atlanta, different parts of Alabama, North Carolina, Memphis. I compare most of them, and all of them have some of the same things in common. Built up, not out. Those are condos or apartments. And most of the time when they build them, they put a bike lane. When you start seeing bike lane, you know it's time to roll then. They put more money into bike lane than they put into people living homeless on the street. You'd rather put paint on the street before you help someone save their life. Two or three people died in the winter, froze to death on the streets of Memphis.
Mm.
So it's something unethical about that. And so as long as this go on, I haven't heard Biden talk about no homelessness, poverty,
right.
Reparation.
Right.
By the way, when are you going to talk about reparation? He's talking about giving all these billions of dollars to open Africa. When are you going to talk about reparation? We don't need to study, we don't need another study about no reparations. And look how long they've been studying the H.R. 40. We are the only people that will let them let us sit by the wayside. They gave reparations to the Japanese. They gave reparations to the Jews. And for the most part, the Jewish Holocaust did not take place on American soil.
Right.
But
okay.
We are the only one waiting in line for reparation. Why is that? See, you can't talk to me about no study, about no reparation. If you want to study, get in your car and go to any hood, and you'll see we living in a third world country. Don't talk to me about no study, but Joe Biden hadn't brought it up. And the good old black folks who are standing beside him, some of them preachers standing beside him, hadn't talked about reparation. Why? I hear the same excuse. Well, you know, if black folks get reparations, all they're going to do is waste the money. I don't care what they do with it. It's time for reparations. Whatever way it comes, it's time for it. And so we got to stop playing. We got to hold these politicians to the fire. Now, see, I had something for them. If I became the governor of the state of Tennessee, the first thing I was going to tell them, pass me that pen. And that was the first thing I was going to sign into reparations, the state of Tennessee reparations. I make no bones about that. Most people already know who I am. You think I run for the president of the United States and not every time I open my mouth is going to be about reparations? Period. Now, what president of the United States, not even Obama talked about reparations. Why?
Got that right. That's right.
Why? So, yeah, I would be a different type of breed of president, that's for sure. Red or not, here I come.
I know that's right. All right, family. Well, y'all heard it right here live and in real living color. What we're going to do is open up the lines for you all. If you have a question, a comment for Dr. Atwater, you can press 1 now, and we will certainly bring you into the conversation. While we're doing that, Dr. Atwater, share with the family about your museum, you know, the property there and so forth, and what you do. Just what, I mean, one of the few things that you do with the community.
Yes, well, the museum falls up under the African American International Museum Foundation, and it's been around about 40 years, and we have 20 museums, and these museums travel all over the world. And so we have the Buffalo Soldier Museum, the Tuskegee Airmen Museum, the Black Holocaust Museum, the Black Inventors Museum, the Women of the Civil Rights Movement, Children of the Civil Rights Movement. We have we have 20 different museums. We also have Sammy Davis Jr., everything he owns, we have in the museum. We have an Egyptian museum that travels. Part of that is in Milan, Italy right now. And then we have the Men of Honor, where we have over 2,500 oil paintings of prominent black men. So we dedicate that hall to black men and boys. So then we have, again, the Women of the Civil Rights Movement. We have about 2,500 paintings. We do have the largest collection of shackles in the world, and that's including Washington, D.C. We have a large banquet hall where we can seat up to 600 people or more. Through this museum, we feed 10,000 individual homeless people, single parents, every year. I personally donate 5,000 book bags and school supplies and 5,000 coats and blankets and heaters every year. For the senior citizen, I donate 200 air conditioners every year. And I also create jobs during the summertime, at least 3 or 4 months, for ex-felons, gang members, teenagers, and people that's on hard times right now. And I pay them $100 per day to sustain themselves for that 3 or 4 months. So now how many presidential candidates you know that do that? Ask Biden, Obama, ask Biden. They will not do it because, see, politicians have a disconnect to the average grassroots people. So, and we a literacy program here. We also teach 10 different languages here. We teach Spanish, Swahili, French, German, Italian. So we have that class here. We do have entrepreneur class. We teach you right now how to make facial scrubs and soap and basket weaving. We also cooking class and editing class. So we have a lot of we teach you how to write a business plan, how to buy your homes. We have a home education class also too. In our home class, we also try to teach people to build a home with solar panels. So we have a solar energy program where we won a grant about, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so we do a little bit of everything in the hood. I love this neighborhood. It's called New Chicago, and that's where I live until the day I die, straight in the hood. a president from the hood. What you think of that, Sister Emily? Straight from the hood.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to go to the lines. Family, again, if you have a question or comment, you can press 1. So let's go to caller at 9808. Oh, that might be Bubba Omawali. Let's see. Greetings.
How
are
you doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Sister Dottie.
Hi. How are you?
Wonderful.
How's everyone?
Just
wonderful.
Fine.
Doctor.
How are you?
Great. I love your platform. And I would like
to
know how I can donate to your platform.
Oh, my. what I'm going to do on June the 19th, I'll be rolling out my website and my platform, but what I'm trying to do also is in each state, I want to identify at least 10 people that can contact me so they can work with me with this political campaign, whatever way they want to volunteer. But you can contact me at 901-502-2326. And again, that number is 901-502-2326.
2326.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Okay, that's great. Okay, well, I will definitely check with the people of my organization, which is the MWLMC, how I can be of service to you. I'm so happy somebody is running for president. That is definitely worthwhile. They're not supposed to be as really been sticking in my red light. You talk about a thorn in the side. That's what it is. Feel like I'm being killed every day, every time somebody else runs. Get into office, and I know they mean us no good. So I thank you for your platform, and I will definitely be voting for you.
Thank you. One vote, one boy.
That's right. There you go. Thank you, sister.
Thank you.
All right, Sally. Listen, you know what we do here. We bring it real and raw. So I'm sure some of you, if not all of you, are not surprised about this conversation and other conversations. But listen, now go to caller at 9498. 9498, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Hello, Sister Filet.
Hey, Brother Ray Ray. How you be?
All right. Hello, Philly. A lot of stuff going on. hey. I wanted to ask Omar Wally when he spoke of, first a lot of people, it's just so hard to get people back into the conscious movement with so many of the gatekeepers, coming at it, I look at the great Alton Maddox in the UAM, and it's just so hard now. People, they say it's a struggle, so it is a struggle. But I wanted to see if he was ever in touch with, being that he's talking about the Amos collection, I wonder if he has ever met Sababu and teamed up with Sababu of African World Info Systems.
Okay, I'm not seeing him in queue right now, but I will definitely shoot him a email and ask him about that. And I'm sorry,
because he's
the
definitely Brother Sababu is the man behind the Amos collection of African World Info Systems. He just finished the last book, Psychology of Self-Hatred. And anybody that's basically saying anything pertaining to the works of Amos Wilson have to stay in touch with Sababu.
Okay.
Which he's in, he's
kind of handling
in Jamaica now, but he'll be coming back. So there's
right.
A lot of people talk about Amos and the great work of Amos, and especially Blueprint for Black Power, and he was talking about going back into, Africa, and the Chinese is just wheeling and dealing in there. So Africa has Amos used to say, the Africans are going to fall out of the grip of the European and into the grip of the Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the Asian don't owe us nothing. They don't give a damn about the Africans. They owe us nothing. That European owes. So everybody is saying what the Asian is doing, and they're forgetting about the African, forgetting about the European.
Mm-hmm.
They're forgetting about what the European has done. So what I wanted to ask Ms. Atwater, she's definitely full of fire. How is her following down there, and does she have support?
Do I have support?
How much support do you have down there? Yeah.
Well,
Cynthia McKinney was fierce, and them old jive Negroes down there ran out of there on working for the white man.
Well, see, one thing about me, I guess that's the difference between Cynthia and I. You can't run me no way. I'm free. and I'm bought and I'm bossed. So I don't co-depend on no one. What I want to do, I'm going to do it. So with the Malcolm, the Marcus Garvey, the Malcolm X, and the Harriet Tubman, and so down in my body, I don't let no one write my narrative. I write my own narrative. So for the one that do not support, there's one, I just had a lady to call and say she would support me. So I'm focused on the ones that want to support that glass.
Right, I understand that. Yeah, I understand that, you know. Of course, you're full of fire and everything you're saying is basically on point, you know.
Yes,
but
even when I ran for governor.
Right.
Excuse me? When I ran for governor, Memphis didn't support me, but all over the state of Tennessee, I came in second.
Okay.
So guess where I'm putting my headquarters in Memphis.
So that means people were actually, so you do have some support down there. I see it. Because you sure fired up and you talked about the mandates and this and that. And, hey, sounds good.
See, I have a proven record of what I can do for the people all over the United States. I have support from Texas to Arkansas to Alabama to Georgia to North Carolina to, because I already have a proven record of what I can do for the people.
Right. You know, because you know they got some backwood folks down there that are. Smile in your face, and at least you know what you're dealing with down here. Up here, up north, they'd be your friend, and you won't even know it. They're really your enemy. So at least down south, you know what you're dealing with.
Right. I live in New York, Chicago, and California. People are people, and I deal with them accordingly. I trust and verify. That's what I do. And so I'm going to stay my course of action, and I'll let people look in the secret. Whatever they got to do, let them do it. See, apparently those type people, it hadn't worked for them. Because most of the time, I have to go and save their book.
You definitely got my support because you against mandates.
Oh,
you against
definitely.
Mandates, so you got my support. You know.
Yeah, I'm trying to get our reparation. If I don't do anything else, I'm trying to get in there. If they mess around, they let old crazy Trump get in there. They mess around, let me in there. Ooh, what a day.
Well, you know, Trump is a whole different story. But before he became, just like they were saying, you know, at least see you down in the dirty, you know what you're dealing with down there. See, so Trump. Before Trump was, when Trump was a regular citizen, every black gatekeeper was hanging out with him. They had no problem with him. They was at his casinos. Black folks was going to his casinos. They was eating his food. They was going to his football games. They was buying his liquor. They was doing everything. But
yeah,
at least you know what you're dealing with when you deal with. At least you know what you're dealing with when you deal with him. You know what he's about. These other folks are imposters, so, you know, Biden, you know, and I like Kennedy because Kennedy's against the mandates.
So he's playing
like
anyway.
Well, I done been to too many rallies and different meetings where, and I read the Fauci book. Have you read The Real Anthony Fauci by Kennedy?
Oh, yeah. I got 250,000 books. But at the end of the day, even Kennedy will say what he got to say. Let's see if Kennedy's going to talk about reparation on his campaign trail.
What Kennedy is talking about first, the white man can't even take care of his own. And it's only, in my personal opinion, and they used to say in the streets, I don't care what kind of committees they coming up with. The white man only giving up two things, and he's fresh out of one of them, and he can't take care of his own. He's having a hard time taking care of his own. So as far as anything about reparations, there's going to have to be some bloodshed for reparations because he ain't giving it up. He can't even take care of his own. And with the Great Reset and this World Economic Forum, the only way is going to be some bloodshed. So I believe it's just a ploy to get black folks to vote Democrat. They can't. He getting his own people strung out on drugs and sending them to prison and got them bumming in the street and living in tents and all kind of places. So he ain't even taking care of his own. He taking care of Mexicans more than he taking care of his own.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the corners that I live my life with is that I don't waste a whole lot of time worried about white folks doing. I'm going to stick to my team.
We asking them for reparations without bloodshed. They ain't giving it up.
Well, I'm ready for the bloodshed. I've been ready to shed some blood.
You might be ready, but a whole lot of other people ain't. But that's what I believe. But you're full of fire. I like your style. You against the mandates, I'm rolling with that because there's too many people just blood clotting and dropping and too many stuff. So I like your style. And
It's called House Negro and Field Negro.
And you down there with a bunch of them because they sure got a bunch of them up here.
And they're
where
everywhere.
Sister Filet is from, where Sister Filet is from, that's the capital.
But at the end of the day, Phil Negro and House Negro had never done to me what other folks have done to me. So I can work with them.
Well, you know what you're dealing with down there, and that's why I don't have no problem with the South, because in the South, they know, y'all know what y'all dealing with down there. Up here, they like transvestites. They dress one way and act another.
Yeah.
All right, but that's all. Let me get off my soapbox. That's good, and thanks for giving it up. But I hope the gentleman would want to get in touch with Sababu because he's the Coup de Ville, and he's the main one behind anything that Amos Wilson ever did. And a lot of people is saying Amos this, Amos that, Amos this, Amos that, and I don't know how many of them is actually involved and in conversation with Sababu, who's been struggling on fumes to keep Amos's work alive and working with very few resources. So any help he could get is much appreciated. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Brother Ray Ray. Now, don't give that vote to Kennedy now. You better pass that vote on to me. Keep hope alive.
Well, you got to take that's one of Jesse Jackson's phony cliches. So you got to change that narrative. Jesse Jackson is Big Boule. So make up your own narrative, and you'll get my vote if you're against the mandates. I'm against mandates because just what they're doing is just ridiculous.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Very right. All right. We got time for one more, y'all. Caller, you're at 8521. 8521. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Revolutionary love. Wow. Peace and blessings to everyone. I just want to make it quick because I know you're running out of time. Sister Manera calling out of Newark, New Jersey. Just wanted to say gratitude to that bold, courageous sister elder running. And you have a right. You definitely have a right, and we definitely need to change the paradigm. You know,
exactly.
95% of women and women actually, voted at a greater percentage and was able to get this, I don't know what to call Biden. Oh, he's just a numbskull. Trump and Kamala.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, no.
So I just wanted to thank you for just throwing your hat because we definitely
need to
have bold women, of melanated black women, you know, to take our rightful place and lead, because guess what? You know, no nation is going to raise no higher than its woman.
It's women. Exactly.
You know, and women, we come with, I don't know how we were left out. If you look at the poster of how many men were the president, you know, and they had this poster, and then they had the vice president. You just had one female, and it's just a abomination, you know. You know, so I just want to, you know, make it brief, say, you know, give thanks, you know, for giving me, a chance to actually vote for somebody, because I wouldn't damn sure vote for none of the ones that they had. And it was sad. I didn't even cast my vote, with Kamala. What her name? Kamala. It's just like,
she don't even know her name.
So I love your energy. I love what you stand for. You know, you definitely say reparation, and it should be on every president, vice president, or any person that's in leadership.
Exactly.
We're sick and tired of them pushing us. You know, we pushing the ballots for these people, and we get nothing in return. Nothing in return.
Exactly.
Like I said, the black woman, you know, we even populate the votes here in the city for the mayor and the governor race. And
wow.
When are women going to be sick and tired of being
sick and tired.
Of having these patriarchal, male-hating, woman-hating folks? I hate to say it, if you support black women running, if you support women leadership, you know, I salute you, but this patriarchal system we have to be destroyed. I hate to be destroyed.
Exactly.
And we have to turn this sucker upside down any which way we can. So I thank you for your boldness. I thank you for what you stand for. You know, your energy, you know, I see the you know, the divine in you, and I hear it in your voice. You want better for us, and we deserve better.
Exactly.
And we better fight for better. And if whoever don't you know, support you, you know, they have a problem. You can sit on here and fake it till you make it, you know, but we in a real serious time. As women and as a people. And we women, we care for everybody. When are we going to love ourselves? When are we going to love women being in leadership?
Speak,
you know,
sister.
When?
Now, you said a mouthful now.
And be serious about loving women leadership. Because there ain't nothing wrong with us. We can lead. And we have
exactly.
The power. We have the intelligence to lead.
And on that note, come next Saturday, family, we will continue this conversation as it pertains to our women's day before Mother's Day. And so
I support you. Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Mother's civilization. Yes. So we're going to continue this next week, family. But listen, we've run out of time. And we've got to move forward now. We want to thank everybody for, you know, really just this was powerful. Dr. Atwater, please let folks know how they can continue to be in touch with you and connect with you.
Yes, you can connect with me again at 901-502-2326. My name is Dr. Carnita Atwater. You can go on Facebook and look me up, and you can see I'm not playing no games. I'm unbought, uncompromised, and no one will never buy me or my vote. But, you know, it's funny. I'm going to say this right quick. As that sister was talking, 2 days ago I went to the laundromat, and I had a black brother. He had his little sombrero on, and he had a little old baby that was like with Mexican or whatever. And it was a black sister driving down the street with a buggy. She was homeless. And he started calling her out of her name, cursing at her and everything. And every black woman come up, he was talking to them like a dog. And I looked this brother eyeball to eyeball, and I said, what black woman raised you to disrespect black women like this? I just couldn't understand that. So even in Memphis, when I ran for governor, you had black men that got together and had private meetings to try to stop me from running for governor. Matter of fact, they put a black, young black man in the race against me, who I had helped to run for city council. They put him in that race to divide the black vote. Then they brought a white man down here to get the white votes. But still I rise. So again, that number is 901-502-2326. I'm asking for the sisters and brothers to get together with your organizations. Give me a call. I need your help. I'm going to every, I'm going where Biden will not go. Straight up in the hood. You all be ready.
As we do anyway. The boldest black women, that's what we do. We go in the wilderness. So it's time
exactly.
for mama bears to rise up and take our rightful places in society.
All right, family, listen, we have come to the end of our program for this day. And, hey, it's been a heck of a day. And guess what? It's going to be some good days coming. You can tell. You can hear it. But anyway, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. I want to just remind everyone, listen, with all of you just heard for tonight, one of the things that we want to bring to everyone's attention is that MWM has begun to send letters and emails to various black men groups, organizations, and so forth, particularly here in Philadelphia, but nationwide, and particularly the ones who talk about fighting violence, you know, the anti-violence networks and so forth and so on. What we've researched is that most of them have nothing that they do specifically as it pertains to our women and girls. And so 90% of groups and organizations that you hear talking about anti-violence are focusing on guns and gangs. And then little has anything to do with gender-related violence. And so what's getting ready to happen now is we're calling folks on that, because a lot of them are getting funded, by the way. So MWM has now developed its own rites of passage for our not only young girls, but for our women as well. And with that, of course, how to prevent, survive, and also deal with in every kind of way possible all of the various areas of violence and abuse of our women and girls. So lastly, letters are being sent. Local representatives from different groups, organizations, political folks, and these are for the men right now. We want our men to stand up and help better protect and defend the black woman. And so there's going to be sessions that the men are going to have that they hold to come up with strategies and other things relevant to what to do in this issue that's now becoming a crisis in our communities. The missing black women and girls all over the country, for example. The fact that we now have so many women who are now reporting being raped. That's not even talking about the ones that aren't reporting it. So there's a lot of other violence and abuse of our people that is going kind of, you know, not being dealt with, being pushed to the side. We're not having that any longer. So, again, for Mother's Day, we'll be back next week to report on what brothers have responded so far. And lastly, we'll be sending a letter officially to Minister Farrakhan, Dr. Malana Karanga, Dr. Umar Johnson, and other notable black men. Yeah, and other notable black men, because we want to know their position on the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. We want to hear what they have to say and what they're prepared to now do. So,
and you know, sister, not only what they have to say, but what have they done to aid them?
Oh, no doubt. no doubt. And what are they going to do? That's why we're bringing them, as we said, putting them
in the forefront.
Oh, yeah. That's never been done before, family. But like you heard our sister just say, she's running for president. Listen, even though that's not the first woman to run for president, but it is, as far as we're concerned, in the 21st century, a real black woman. So, I think we got going on here, y'all. Anyway, family, we're going to close this session out. We want to
thank you again for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I want to get more information about that conference. I really want to, get abreast of what's going on. But, again, we're going to close this session out, and we're going to close it out, family, with the great attorney at war, our great attorney, now ancestor, Alton H. Maddox. We will remember him, and more importantly, not just remember him, but make certain that we continue his work. And so with that said, we're going to let Brother, thank you, Sister Manera, and again, Dr. Atwater, and of course,
thank
Brother
you,
Obawale.
You're welcome.
Thank you all. All right. Peace out.
Peace out. Peace out.
On the ballot, right? Mm-hmm. You should always vote no to every part. Mm-hmm. All right? You should never vote yes to every part. You know what a part means? Mm-hmm. All right? All right? Because, you know, it's the rate goes up and down, it fluctuates. said, his rating went up. He tried to drive the interest rates down. You know what I mean? But if you hold bonds, that'll take that time. So if you can't drag that market and manipulate that market, then these guys who loan all this money is losing money. Okay? So they didn't like the way they was controlling the bond market. So all these central banks, see, Federal Reserve Board, the Deutsche Bank, you know, all these banks, all these different countries come together. So they like the United States operate. You all right? And so they have a meeting, and they say, look, we've got to go. All he was Reagan, and, you know, he didn't clean this mess up. Now he don't have this term, he ain't cleaned this mess up, so we got to get rid of it. Okay, now, but Bush got the juice of his own. But, you know, Bush ain't just no chump. All right? You know, he got his own board. All right? So, you know, I like Clinton, you know, who said outright stuff. And Clinton got less on family background than I do. All right. I mean, but Bush is, you know, he's super. Out of Connecticut with all the right schools, you know, father was a senator, you know what I mean? The whole 9 years. He got to go over the CIA, you know what I mean? He got his board. So Bush said, hey, I got to make an inner world around this. All right, Bush, I can't give this bad for us. You know what I mean? I got to make an inner world. All right, so Bush said, hey, what's happening over in the Middle East?
Let's get off in the handful.